What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype podcast. On today's episode, we have a special guest. I'm joined by one of the first players to go pro overseas. Guy was a human highlight mixtape waiting to happen, and he put up some big games in the NBA with the Milwaukee Bucks and the Detroit Pistons and other teams as well. It's Brandon Jennings. Brandon, I appreciate you hopping on the line with us. How you doing, brother?
Good. What's up, Michael? What's up, man? I'm good, man. Out here in California, just chilling right now, relaxing, enjoying this weather.
Good stuff, man. I know you were just at, it seems like the other day, you were just at the Milwaukee Bucks parade when they won the title. So nice to see you doing well out there.
Yeah. The parade was crazy. That whole Bucks experience, man, them winning in six. The parade is something I'll never forget. I think I had about 30 beers. So I'm still recovering, but I'm going to be all right.
You're living life, and it's good to see. One of the other things you're also doing is you're doing an NFT drop, and you're collaborating with Ball is Life. So for the listeners that are tuning in and the readers as well that are looking at this transcript on Hoops Hype, what are some more details you can share about that with our audience?
Hey, well, I'm doing it with Block Party. It's a digital where you can collect collectibles on the platform and things like that. And I just felt like with my business partner, we just felt like it was best to just start it off with, my high school highlights with Ball is Life. You know, they have everything from my career on down, since I was in the eighth grade all the way to high school. So it's just something that, I feel like where the world is going right now with digital art and everything like that. So we'll be able to, sell my high school highlight tape and also be able to give out some personal surprises.
Well, it's certainly picked up a lot. We've seen with the NBA, with Top Shot, what they're doing. So, you touched on some of those like high school mixtapes and some other things. Is this going to be like a one-time NFT drop, or are you going to try to do more stuff with NFTs and Tough Crowd?
Yeah. So the first one we're going to do is my high school highlight, and then we're going to bring Tough Crowd in, which is my clothing line, where people can dress their avatars in Tough Crowd clothes, and you also get one-on-one pieces from Tough Crowd that people won't ever be able to get. And then we're going to bring in my 55-point game against Steph Curry. Not against Steph. I don't like saying against Steph Curry, but against, the Golden State Warriors my rookie year, and it'll be able to come with a jersey and the pair of the shoes that I wore.
That's what's up. And like I touched on, we've seen NBA Top Shop kind of get in that NFT space. And for you, like, what made you kind of get into it and go in with Block Party to do your own NFT drop with that 55-point game and some of the other highlights from high school that you're going to have coming up?
Well, I just feel like Block Party is committed to helping, empower brands from a deeper connection with the fans and things like that. So me and my business partner, we were just saying, like, man, this would be a perfect opportunity with this platform that they have to launch, Tough Crowd, Ball is Life, partnerships like that. And then we'll be able to, just be able to sell the physical product too, with the Ball is Life, you get the tape that comes with it. And so it just all makes sense. It just all makes sense to just, be able to, launch this.
It's funny when you say tape, I don't think some people know like VCRs back in the day, But, those NFTs are going to be collectibles. We've seen it more. But there are some people that don't know as much about the NFTs and like stuff like NBA Top Shot is doing. So for those that are listening, what are like the benefits for your fans to collect those type of moments from your past?
Well, be one of one pieces, and you'll be the only one to be able to have it. Just my viable pieces, my from my career on down, things that I've done in my career, things from my clothing line, like Tough Crowd and things like that. And we're also it's just it's art, and I feel like everybody loves art. So, it's just a great way to be able to create a new platform for everybody else.
And obviously when you were in high school, you had a ton of mixtapes before you went pro overseas. So for some of these younger guys that are playing now, how do you see these type of mixtapes and even now college athletes getting some opportunities to profit off their likeness. How do you see these mixtapes and the merchandise NFTs helping other young players gain visibility?
I think it's just the way the world is going, man. I mean, you know, every year the world's just getting better or whatever with technology and things like that. So I think it's a great opportunity just for the kids. I just know myself when I was overseas at 18, you know, there was already kids at 15, 14 years old, already getting paid to play professional basketball and already, you know, signing contracts, you know, till they're all the way to 18. So, you know, with this, with their highlights and the things that, you know, all the hard work that they put in, I mean, of course, I think it's great, you know, for kids to get paid and to be able to, you know what I'm saying, because it's them, you know what I'm saying, they're putting in the work and they're putting in the time and everything. So, you know, they should be able to benefit off that.
So now that it was different when you went pro, this wasn't the case that, you know, college players could profit off their likeness. So now that those players can profit from their likeness on the college level, I was curious from your perspective, what do you think that that means, not only for those kids, but even the game of college basketball?
It's changing. You can go back to the, you know, O'Bannon days with Sonny Vaccaro. We stopped the NCAA from, being able to, make money off kids without them getting paid. So, I think everything that a lot of the other players that didn't go to college, like myself, Lomo Ball, and, some of the other players that skipped, it just forced their hand. It just forced it to everybody's hand.
Obviously hindsight's 2020, but if you had the ability, right, to profit off your likeness and play here in the United States in college, would that have changed your decision at all? Or were you set on going pro overseas no matter what in a hypothetical situation?
I felt like during that time, I did want to go to college. Like, I was committed to Arizona, and then, Luke Olsen had retired. So college was always in the make, but I mean, I always had dreams of going straight out of high school. Like, that was always my dream to be like, one of the next LeBron James and Sebastian Telfair and all those type of guys. So I think my decision probably was still just go pro.
So for you at the time with the dynamics that you had, you touched on it a little bit, but When you were sitting down and making your final decision to skip college and go pro overseas at 18, what went into that entire decision and how did you decide that that was the best route for you at that time?
I feel like I had good advisors. Sonny Vaccaro, he was the one to orchestrate everything, get the deals done, also with Bill Duffy during that time. So, those guys, they really orchestrated everything for me, made sure I was put in the right position. With Chris Stone and Sonny Vaccaro, they got the deal done with Under Armour. So everything just kind of happened really fast during the time where I really didn't have any time to really think. And, Sonny just put it together and then it was time to go.
When you made that decision, it's obviously would have been hard at the time for you to foresee what it would mean for other players. But we've seen since then, guys like LaMelo Ball, RJ Hampton, more recently, that have gone overseas straight out of high school and done their thing over there. So now that you've had time to kind of see this evolution since the time you went overseas, what do you think that your decision meant for those future prospects who ultimately decided to go pro overseas?
Yeah, well, at first, I was like, man, this is a big risk. Like, what if this don't work out? Boom, boom. Like, I was watching the news a lot, ESPN, about my decision. It was totally different. A lot of people in college wasn't feeling it. But now that I look back at it now, like 12 years from then or something like that, I'm happy I did make the decision. I'm happy that other kids did follow and it didn't work out for them. That means it does work. It can work. We'll just see what the future holds.
For you, when you made that decision, what was it like for you as a teenager living life overseas on your own? Because it seems like it's different. You mentioned kind of the European players, they're doing this at like 13, 14, some of these kids. So for you individually, what was that transition like to be overseas on your own as a teenager at 18 at the time?
Well, I wasn't by myself. I had my mom and my brother with me. My brother was like in the 7th or 8th grade at that time. My mom was driving me around, making sure I was always good. So I had my family there throughout the year. Under Armour was always coming in and out. And then I had teammates like Andre Hudson, that played at Michigan State, and Alan Ray, and then went to Villanova, and E.B. Jagger, that went to Penn State. So, you know, I had American players too on the team that were, you know, good teammates and, you know, things like that. So I wasn't really, you know, too much alone. Like, you know, I always had a roommate and things like that on the road. So, you know, I had some good people around.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Not everybody has that support system around them. And then, you know, you touched on too how it could have been a big risk, but you end up going pretty high in the draft and you end up landing with the Milwaukee Bucks at the time, coming into the NBA after being a 10th overall pick. For you, being in Milwaukee at the start of your career and then ultimately kind of wrapping up at the end there in the 2017-18 season with Milwaukee, and you touched on being a part of that championship parade. When you hear the phrase, you know, the city of Milwaukee, what does Milwaukee mean to you, having been there for so many years?
It's just, you know, Milwaukee, blue collar, you know, blue collar state. You know, it's tough. You know, saying they just, you know, say they just keep going. They just keep going no matter what. And I mean, it's just it's a place that I can call my second home, a city that embraced me, you know, in my younger days in my career, 4 years in Milwaukee, you know, we made the playoffs twice and we had some good times. So, you know, that's how I could just sum it up for me.
When you look at kind of the totality of your career, you know, from what you thought it would be going pro after coming overseas to the end of your career, what did you think of your career overall? Is it what you thought it would be? Anything maybe different? What are your thoughts overall on your NBA career?
Honestly, my career was up and down. It was a lot of inconsistency. And that was just through a lot of things outside of basketball, that kept me a lot away from focus and from being able to, you know, really, you know, say coming to my own. Yes, the injury happened in Milwaukee, you know, with the Achilles and things like that. You know, but overall to me, you know, I just think it was chaos.
You know, you mentioned the injury. Whether it's a Brandon Roy, a Yao Ming, you know, there's always guys that seemingly in the start of their career or in the earlier years, you know, Tracy McGrady went through a bunch of injuries. Unfortunately, it's part of the game. Grant Hill as well. For you, did you ever wonder, you know, what would have happened if maybe you didn't have some of those injuries earlier on in your career at all?
I would have been an all-star for sure if I don't tear my Achilles. And I believe we make the playoffs that year in Detroit. And then, you know, I end up getting paid or whatever. You know, that probably what happens. But then again, you know, who knows then what happens after that? You know, because I feel like with the injury, you know, that's when chaos started happening, you know, with a lot outside of my career. And then so I just feel like with the money, it would have probably been even more chaos.
For you, you know, you touched on a little bit, you know, the phrase like chaos and like, you know, would have been an all-star. What you had the 55-point game or 55-57, forgive me, I forget, but obviously it was a historical night. But when you had that game, like what stuck out to you about it? And I mean, I would assume that was your favorite moment in the NBA, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, the 55-point game was something, you know, that's something I still can't explain. You know, I just got hot. And, you know, the ball was just going in. But the crazy thing is I only scored like 10 points in the first half. And, you know, I had a terrible first quarter. and I just came out in the second half hot. But that's one of my, yeah, I'm sure, everybody's like, man, that should be your favorite game. But one of my favorite games ever is my first game ever in NBA when I almost had a triple-double in Philly. Because I started, I didn't even know if I was going to start. He told me, like, the day before, and to almost have a triple-double, that was pretty cool, too.
Were there any things about the NBA that surprised you in your career, whether it was on or off the court?
It's a lot of ego, man. It's a lot of ego. And, you know what I'm saying? It takes a very strong leader to be able to be able to control the locker room. So, you know what I'm saying? Because guys, everybody's getting paid. Everybody thinks they should do this. Everybody should think they're better than this and that. So it's just, the ego. And, you start to realize it's a business. Like, it's really a business.
When you, obviously, you touched on a little bit about Detroit, too, but being a local guy here in Brooklyn and New York, I got to ask you, because you did spend a year here with the Knicks towards the end of your career. What was that like for you? Because, I always enjoy hearing players' perspectives and being in New York, depending on their personality. You know, it's always made out to be this big city and, you have to have a certain type of personality. But from your vantage point, being here that one season, what was it like for you before you ended up moving on to Washington later on that season? But what was it like with the Knicks during that time?
Man, playing with the Knicks was cool, man. I mean, because I was coming off the Achilles injury, so I was really excited just to be back on the court playing. Playing with guys like Carmelo Anthony, Derrick Rose, and things like that. So, I mean, I had a great time, overall, just, living in, putting on the Knicks jersey, being part of that Knicks Nation, which is crazy. So I just had some great times, man. And, I wish things would have worked out better as far as how things went down. But, there's just a lot going on, too, during that time.
So what have you been up to, post-NBA? You played a little bit in Russia, I believe, towards the end of your 20s. But then what have you been doing since then after that? Obviously, we touched on the NFT stuff. But what else have you been up to?
Just my clothing brand, Tough Crowd. Just growing the brand, just trying to take the next steps with my brand. It's my third year into doing my brand Tough Crowd with clothes and stuff like that. So I'm just ready for the new beginnings and the new year, finishing strong this year.
Do you have anything new coming up with the clothing brand that maybe your fans would want to know about?
I have a couple big collab meetings with a couple shoe companies. So that's all I can say on that. I'm not going to say the names, but yeah, I have a big shoe companies that might want to collab the next year. So be on the lookout for that.
That'd be awesome. Other than that, it's funny. I kind of thought of you a little bit too recently, because I don't know if you saw OJ Mayo recently signed a deal to play overseas. Have you ever had the itch to either still play, whether it's overseas, I don't know, maybe the big three or anything like that? Have you ever thought about that as a former player?
No, not really. I told myself I was going to probably get back in shape, but I'm not going to force it or anything like that. I love what I do right now. I have my own brand. I'm able to, experience new things in life that's taking me different places. So, we'll see.
And last one for me on a basketball perspective, have you ever thought about going into, whether it was coaching, try to do something like front office, things like that?
Maybe be like a ambassador for the team or something like that, or a creative director for NBA team or something like that, since I'm on the design side now in my life.
That's an interesting answer. That's something different and unique. I could see you doing some stuff like that for the Bucks. I won't take credit for it if it happens, but that'd be cool. Brandon, happy to see you are doing well with life. Appreciate you certainly hopping on, taking some time with us to talk about the upcoming stuff you have in the NFT space, your career in general and life after basketball. You know, for folks that are looking to purchase the NFTs and things like that, what's the best way that they could be on the lookout for that?
Blackparty.com.
Awesome. So there you go, folks. You can check it out on that website. And Brandon, once again, appreciate you hopping on the line with us here on the Hoopside Podcast, brother. Wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Thank you for the time, man. Thank you.
I also want to thank everyone else for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopside Podcast with guest appearances from NBA players such as Brandon Jennings, coaches, executives, and media members, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can also keep up with my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.